Hello, welcome back to the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Oh, not too bad, Scott. Enjoying the off season better than I thought I would, and I guess better than it was the last time we talked, which was following UC's pretty devastating loss to Nevada in the NCAA tournament. But I've regrouped emotionally, and I'm ready to move forward and I guess embrace the nicer weather and, you know, start moving towards football season and talking about next year with hoops. How are you doing, Scott?
Time has healed the wound of the NCAA tournament, at least for me. It hasn't for Mick Cronin, from what everything he says. But the good thing about being a fan is you don't have to be the coach, and you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Yeah, and I'm sure, like, in the back of his mind, he's constantly thinking about, you know, what could have been. And, you know, we talked about this ad nauseum the last time we talked. I mean, the path set out in front of them following the Georgia State win in round one was just perfect. And, you know, you saw, you know, Kentucky go down, Tennessee go down, Virginia go down. I mean, the path ahead of them was about as laid out as perfectly as you could possibly want, you know, going into the tournament. When we talked about it, that was, on paper, it looked like one of the toughest quadrants in the entire field. And everyone ahead of them fell. And, unfortunately, UC themselves laid an egg by giving up 22 points in 12 minutes in historical fashion. It still stings. I get it. I mean, from like a Mick Cronin standpoint, I mean, you look at like the guys you're losing, Gary Clark, Jacob Evans, potentially Kyle Washington. I mean, I know Mick's going to put on a brave face, but it's hard when you're a head coach and you have everything set out right in front of you the way you want it, and it just, you know, just doesn't work out, I guess.
That to take nothing away from, like, Loyola, but, like, the fact that that was the team that came out of the region, like that would have been a tough game, but, man, it's, like, really hard to not, like, look, like, one game past Nevada, and they could have beaten Kansas State and gone to the Final Four. Like, that one's just gonna sting, like, it's gonna sting as a fan, like, every time the tournament comes around and you think of these players. Like we talked about last time. Like, so in that sense, it's gonna be really hard to get over that one in the long term. But in the short term, not having basketball has helped to get better.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been the hardest part for me to get over, you know, coming out of there, is that, you know, most of the game UC dominated, and, you know, we had visions of glory, we had visions of a Final Four, we had a vision of cutting down nets, grabbing a regional trophy and, you know, getting to San Antonio, and then all within a span of 12 minutes, that all came crashing down, and then all of a sudden, it just was a massive thud emotionally. And basketball season was over, and all of a sudden, the only thing we had to look up to was spring ball and a very, very long summer, and that was about it.
I guess the good thing so far is that it's been pretty, like, action-packed this offseason. Like, basketball bringing in some new recruits, football getting its spring games going, and some coming and goings with the football team as well. Where do you want to start? Like, what do you want to dive into first?
Yeah, let's stay on the hoops track. We can talk about the new recruits that were signed, at least committed. I don't believe Rashawn Fredericks is signed yet, but
I think he did yesterday. He did yesterday.
He did officially sign. Okay, so the 2018 class. It started out with Logan Johnson leading the way, potential point guard of the future. A 6'2", 170, four-star recruit out of California. He's been committed for months now, and he signed a while ago, so he's been around for a while. But then the latest ones in the last round in the spring period, Lequel Hartnett out of Maryland. Seems like a solid winger. I mean, it's like he's 6'7", 195, which of course he's going to get a UC offer. If you're 6'7", 195, you automatically get get the eye of Mick Cronin and his staff. So he got offered, he signed, high three-star recruit out of Maryland, and then, like, to your point, Rashad Fredericks, a first-team JUCO All-American out of Motlow State Community College. He signed yesterday, picked UC over Arkansas, because of course he did. Why would you go to Arkansas to play basketball? Overall, it looks like let's start with the devil's advocate. A lot of people have criticized Mick for not signing the high four-star, high five-star recruits. We can kind of delve into why he doesn't do that. But overall, I mean, you've got high three-star, low four-star signees in this class, a nice reloading, rebuilding class, potentially bracing yourself for Jacob Evans ultimately moving on to the NBA, trying to backfill on the wing, trying to backfill at guard. It looks like a pretty balanced, talented class. And again, another what looks like an offensive-minded class.
Yeah, you bring in, like you said, like with Logan, they have like a point guard. He's been there forever. The one that seems really interesting is Fredericks. He put up big numbers at his JUCO last year, which I mean, like, you can take that for like what it's worth. It's like he's probably the best player on. Who knows how good his team was, and who knows how good the other teams were, but still, he like averaged nearly 18 and 10. So like, you'll take that every day, and like his rebounding, like really, I think that was the thing that impressed me the most. Like just with his stats. Like 117 offensive rebounds is like they're pretty good for like somebody who's 6'6". Like he probably played bigger at his JUCO, so like some of that may not translate, but it seems like he has good rebounding instincts. Like because you could look at like some of the big guys that you see brought in from the JUCOs, like Czech Muj and like Big Dave, and like their rebounding numbers at the JUCO level weren't really that impressive. You could kind of forecast ahead to see, like, oh, that probably won't really translate to the college game, and it really didn't. But with Fredericks, like, 10 rebounds, like, you'll take that. Seems like he has pretty good instincts. And if he can score, that really helps the burden that is going to be left behind when, like, Evans will probably stay pro. That seems like it'd be surprising, since he's, like, a late first-round pick in a lot of the mock drafts I've seen, at least. So I think he would go. But if he came back and you just brought Fredericks off the bench, like you'd have at least one big scoring option off the bench.
Yeah, just as like to your point about the size, I mean, it's so hard to kind of tell how talent level is going to translate once you bring guys in either from high school or the JUCO level to a high D1 program. But Fredericks was like the fourth tallest guy in his team, so it kind of makes sense why he was like one of the main guys to grab a bunch of rebounds. And to your point, yeah, I think we pretty much have to go under the assumption that Jacob Evans is gone. So if you're under that assumption, you have to fill the wing somehow. And it seems like Fredericks is as solid of a replacement as for Jacob Evans as it seems like you're going to find. And just listening to like Chad Brendel yesterday, it sounds like one of the things that really caught his attention when he visited UC was that he attended for one of Mick Cronin's patented intense practices, and this isn't like a practice, but that they were working on in November or December prior to a game. This is like mid April or whatever, and it really caught his attention. He really liked the culture, and I mean, if that's the kind of culture he's going to embrace, he's going to thrive here in this system.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, that's the kind of player that, like, Mick likes to recruit and, like, that always seem to thrive at UC. The guys who, like, go out there, like, are willing to do the work. We've seen some guys who were highly thought of, like, seemingly not ready to do the type of work that gets you minutes and gets you, like, in the rotation.
So, Jermaine Lawrence.
Yeah.
Do you just want to name names? We just named Jermaine Lawrence right off the bat.
Yeah, pretty much. And you could say Quad Moore for that too, since like he never really put it together. I don't think he was a the ginormous recruit, but like he had a lot of talent. He just he don't it just didn't seem like he was built for UC system.
Right.
But like Fredericks, like even if Evans comes back, like having somebody score off the bench, because that's still going to be a question mark this year, no matter if they start Cobb or Jennifer at the point. It'll be the same thing as last year in that regard. Even with Cumberland back, you need at least somebody to step up. And hopefully it'll be Fredericks and like whoever the point guard is can take a step forward offensively.
Yeah, so basically going into next season, jumping ahead to kind of what we kind of talked about before the podcast, you know, our predictions for the starting lineup and some of the main contributors off the bench. I mean, you're basically replacing the starting 3 through 5 spot. So if you're looking at what to replace on the current roster at the 3 or the 4, I mean, I don't know, maybe you slide Jerron Cumberland down to the 3 and then you play Justin Jennifer and Kane Broome tag-teaming the point and shooting guard, or you just keep, you know, tag-teaming the point, keep Jerron Cumberland at the 2, and then you know, plug in Rashawn Fredericks at the 3, and then you figure out the 4 and 5 among your stable of big men down there. It also sounds like maybe Rashawn Fredericks could play a 4 in a smaller lineup. You know, to your point, he's obviously a rebound magnet, so you can definitely gobble those up underneath. And I mean, he's a big guy. I mean, he's 6'6", 220, 230, something like that. I mean, he's not a small kid. The ability to have this guy come off the bench, not come off the bench, but come off the street and sign with you and give the staff a lot of flexibility when you're losing a guy like Evans and Clark at the 3-4 is huge for this roster next year.
For what it's worth, UC did list him 6'6", 200 pounds. But, like, he'll go through the weight picking up process during the summer for sure.
Right.
It'd be pretty big, like, whatever position he can slide into. Because you would think somebody with his, like, pedigree, at least with what he did, just based off of that, would, like, step into the rotation. Because, like you said, they have, like, plenty of spots to fill and, like, a lot of minutes to get taken up. So if he can, like, start at the 3, maybe even, like, start at the 4 and, like, one of, like, Trevor Moore or Keith Williams, like, takes a leap this summer. It'll be interesting to see, like, how things shake out. So, or like you said, maybe they just play Broome and Jennifer.
Well, that's my question. Like, so what is your starting 5?
I probably would just go with like Scott, Brooks, Cumberland. I'll say Fredericks and then Broome.
Yeah.
I don't know, they started Jennifer a lot last year. Maybe Jennifer.
Yeah, I mean auto plugins are obviously gonna be like Cumberland and Scott. So there's your 2 and the 5.
So maybe 4, maybe,
well, maybe 3.
Yeah, maybe you could even go like Scott, Fredericks, Cumberland, Broome, and Jennifer. Even though like Broome and Jennifer didn't play a ton together last year.
Yeah. I struggle with this because I don't know what to do with Broome and Jennifer. Like, I feel like, I mean, I Broome should continue to take more of the minutes, like he did in the second half of the season. But I don't know if it's a bad thing to have them play 1-2 and then just tag team the point guard position. Like, start both of them, slide Cumberland down to the 3, and then, you know, adjust your lineup accordingly. If you want to go smaller, plug in Fredericks to the 4 or rotate Cumberland and Fredericks at the 3. That I feel like that would make the most sense as you're kind of working through this like transition year.
Yeah, I kind of think you're right. But what, Jennifer's going to be, what, like a senior next season somehow? Then, like, we know Mick likes to ride the veterans. So
that's exactly it. That's why I think he will have a starting spot. Go ahead.
No, I was just agreeing with you there. I kind of think they'll both start. Him and Cobb. Or him and, I almost said Cobb for some reason. Him and Kane Broom. Or do you think, like, there's a chance, like, we could see, like, Sosume maybe take a starting spot?
I would be surprised if he didn't. I mean, like, I don't know. Scott, from what the backups this past season showed this past year, I mean, Scott seems to have penciled himself into a starting role. I'm actually pretty excited to see what he can bring. I mean, not to criticize, like, Gary Clark or Kyle Washington, you know, too much. I mean, obviously what they brought to this program was incredible the last couple of years, but it seems like Scott had this extra little boost of ferocity underneath that those two were missing. And I'm just curious to see what he can do with that given, you know, a starting spot and, like, 20 to 30 minutes to play with. I don't know if that's going to – I mean – If there's any season to really find out what Trey Scott can do, it's next season, where the competition is – there's not that much competition, and he's the most experienced power forward on the team. So I'm curious to see what he does in that five spot. But between Diarra, Sosume, and Brooks, I mean, how many times did we really come down on Sosume for doing something stupid last year or Diarra or Brooks or whatever? I feel like we were talking more negatively about Brooks and Diarra. It seems like Sosume is further along developmentally, despite being a little bit younger than those other two. So, like, I wouldn't be shocked if it is Scott and Sosume to start next year.
Yeah, it seems like it would definitely be Scott, just because you know what he can bring you offensively. And, like, to your point a couple of minutes ago, like, his athleticism, like, really shines. Because, like, he's, like, a different, like, he's, like, a much more athletic than Washington and Clark both were. Like, they were good players, but, like, nobody would say their strength was, like, being, like, a dynamic athlete.
Right.
And, like, maybe that won't translate, like, if Scott plays, like, a ton of minutes. But, like, if he can give you those boosts and, like, keep up his offensive production, which, like, he ended up being, like, one of the most productive players on the team last year. Albeit in a smaller sample than a lot of the other guys. Well, like, you have to like his energy and what he brings. It's like the biggest knock on, like, Sosume, Diarra, and Brooks is, like, their offensive game just wasn't even close to being there. Like, I think that was the biggest thing about Sosume's game. It's like you could see the flashes defensively. But you couldn't really see, like, the flashes offensively. And maybe that's just something that will come. Like, last year on free throws, he was 4 of 20. That's not good.
That is not good. I don't know. We're kind of under the assumption that there's going to be a massive drop-off between this last year and next year in terms of the power forward center positions. I guess it's up to the staff to really try to mitigate that. So, you know, I kind of go back to my question that we kind of talked about a couple of pop. Go to a small lineup of, like we talked about a little bit earlier, like you go Jennifer, Broom, Cumberland, I don't know, maybe Trevor Moore / Keith Williams, and then put Scott at the five. Like, is that something that Mick even entertains this offseason?
I hope so. I really hope that's something he looks at. Like, cause I guess you give up some size, because Scott's listed at 6'8", so he's probably not a true 6'8". So, like, you'd be playing, like, with a little smaller lineup than, like, he's used to. But then, like, your lineup would be, like, much more athletic with a bunch of guys who could make plays. Like, I think just, like, evolution-wise, like, that's kind of, like, where basketball is going. And, like, you can either, like, be, like, a dinosaur, or you can, like, try to, like, play fast, not even playing fast, just like changing your style up a little bit and like playing more of like the modern way.
Yeah, I mean, you look at, like, you know, Villanova in the national championship. I mean, Jay Wright's calling card for the last several years has been that guard-centric, fast, free-flowing offensive play. Like, his, you know, he'll play a big out there, but it's a big that's gonna run up the court and is athletic enough to bang on down low and also, you know, sprint up court and get a quick transition layup or something like that. The whole idea of having you know, three guards and two forwards is so archaic at this point. I would be shocked if this is going to be something that UC continues to hang on to for the next several years. I mean, at the same point, I mean, kind of what we were talking about earlier, you know, Mick has his tendencies that he constantly likes to go to. He leans on seniors for better or worse, and he's a man that just does not like to change his philosophy very often. So, I almost feel like we have to kind of go under the assumption that's going to be a three-guard, two-power-forward lineup, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's safe to say. And with both the seniors getting a lot of run. Cause like, you can, like, go back through, like, every senior guard he's, like, recruited. Or not recruited, but, like, that he's had under his watch. And every single one of them played a significant amount of minutes. Even, like, the much-maligned Kevin Johnson. Like, when he was getting minutes in front of, like, Cumberland and Evans.
Oof, God. Glad those days are behind us. So, I guess... So what's your starting lineup again? Under the assumption of three guards, two forwards.
Broom, Jennifer, Cumberland, Scott, and... I'll say Brooks. I'll say Fredericks will come off the bench to start. I don't know, Maybe Fredericks will start. I don't know. It depends where they want to play him. Maybe they'll start Fredericks. Because if you start Fredericks and Scott, that means you're starting... Your whole starting lineup is, like, not incredibly tall. So maybe they'll start Brooks and Scott will just come off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it doesn't really matter who's starting, but I guess, like, the lineup that gets most of the minutes is you're thinking Broom, Jennifer, Cumberland, Scott Brooks.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way.
I guess in that scenario, so are you locking in Broom at point guard, or do you think Mick and Co are gonna tag team with Jennifer and Broom?
I kind of think they would lean towards Broom. Because, like, it seemed like when they both played last year, Broom was always the point guard and Jennifer played off the ball. Like, that's going to be something Jennifer's really going to have to improve in, like, his, like, off-the-ball offense. So it seemed like he wasn't really, like, dynamic that way. Because if he's not good at... If, like, he's not good off the ball, he's really going to be pushed by Moore. It's like Moore really took a big step up last year. I think there's a chance Moore could end up starting.
Where do you think Moore's going to start?
I would think he would start instead of one of the guards. Like, either Broom or Jennifer would come off the bench.
Yeah. Well, so do you think Moore is going to get more minutes? We kind of keep using the verbiage starting, but I feel like it's not really as important as who gets the most minutes. So do you think, like, Moore is going to get more minutes than Jennifer or Broom? Like, do you think there's a chance of that?
I think there's a chance he'll get as many minutes as Jennifer.
Okay.
If we were just, like, splitting minutes, I would guess, like, Broom, like, I don't know. I kind of think maybe, like, they would all, like, get, like, 27 to 20 minutes a game. Like, depending on who's the hot hand. Like, maybe, like, one game Broom gets 20 minutes, but one game he gets 30 minutes. But, like, they all get that general range.
Right.
Because it's going to be really interesting because, like, just assuming Evans is gone, like, there's a lot of mix and matching to do because, really, outside of that Cumberland and, like, the point guard, like, nobody really has that experience, like, starting. And even if they have experience starting, they don't have experience being such a huge, like offensive force like they're going to have to be. I guess that's where, like, Frederick steps in. Like, maybe there's a chance he takes down one of the starting spots, and you just play a smaller lineup with Scott at center.
Yeah, I guess, like, I mean, in that kind of context, it's as we're trying to start divvying up minutes, I mean, where does Keith Williams fall in here? Because, I mean, he's kind of fighting with Trevor Moore for playing time, and it seems like Moore has the inside track. I mean, does he stick around? I mean, there's all these, like, rumors that were flying at the end of the last season that Keith Williams is potentially looking to transfer. I don't know how much that, you know, held water. I doubt much of it did, if anything. But, I mean, like, it seems kind of like the odd man out going into next season. Like, you can pretty much find spots for most everyone in this roster coming back, except for Keith Williams, it seems like.
Yeah, it seems like if they were to, like, play smaller and play faster, he would be one of, like, the big beneficiaries of that. Because, like, maybe he could be, like a potential, like, stretch four type of guy with how long his, like, arms are and how good a defender he is. Maybe that would be asking a bit much of him, but, like, he could be definitely like a three if you went with a small lineup.
Right.
But, like, we all heard those rumors, so there had to be something to it. It couldn't just be something.
Yeah, they don't come out of
nowhere. Yeah, it couldn't be one person make, ah, I think Keith Williams may transfer. Because, like, there was too much going around about his status. It's like he probably wasn't happy with his playing time. And, like, in a way, it's good that he wasn't happy with it, because he didn't play a lot. But, like, hopefully that's just motivation for him to, like, step up his game. Like, he's another one of those guys that, like, has to be more consistent on the offensive end. Because he really didn't bring it offensively last year at all. And it just seems like he has much better potential, like, on that end than he ended up showing last year.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of a funky roster next year. It seems like, I mean, I guess that's kind of what happens when you lose a lot of upperclassman talent to either, you know, the draft or graduation. I wouldn't be surprised if we see like 7-8 guys floating around 10-20 minutes of play. Like, Cumberland's going to probably play close to 40. I would be shocked if he didn't. But then, like, after that, like, all the power forwards, Broom and Jennifer, I can definitely see them, you know, splitting 20 minutes again, you know, give or take, like, 3 or 4 either way. I mean, I feel like it's just going to be whoever happens to be playing better at any given point in time is going to be that guy who's supposed to be playing on the floor.
Yeah, definitely. Because, like, yeah, it's hard to really forecast because outside of Cumberland, like, nobody else played, like 20 minutes a game. So it's really hard to, like, say, oh, this guy's definitely going to get a lot of minutes because we really haven't seen it happen yet.
Like, that's going to be one hell of a decision to have to make because, you know, Mick, he's not, like, here's one of Mick's main weaknesses is that it seems like he subs and he breaks up momentum by subbing. I don't know. I look at him when he's, when UC either has a lot of momentum or they're trying to get something going, he either oversubs or undersubs. I feel like he doesn't quite know how to pull that lever quite right, and that's kind of what worries me going into next year. Is like I could see something happen where, I don't know, Trevor Moore hits a couple of threes and then gives up an easy layup on the defensive end, and then he benches him for 10 minutes for Keith Williams, like something stupid like that. Like, I could totally see that happening next year, and that's kind of, like, one of my biggest concerns, not having, like, defined guys going into next season at key positions.
Yeah, because, the other thing, Mick, is, like, he's really stubborn with, like, his, like, lineups, where they don't seem to change that much either.
That's true, yeah.
Except if, like, you said, somebody makes a mistake defensively, then, like, their ass is on the bench.
But it pissed me off to no end last year when, like, whatever, I think it was against Georgia State, Jacob Evans got two bullshit fouls early in that game, and he basically sat on the bench because of Mick Cronin's two foul rule, which makes no sense for Jacob Evans because he's like hardly ever even sniffs foul trouble, like, near the end of the game. I think he only had like four fouls like twice last year. Most of the time he sits around two or three. Like, there was no way he was going to get a third or fourth, or even there's no way he's going to get a fourth or fifth foul in that game. But Mick has those, like, you know, stubborn, you know, ways about him where he just wants to stick to those rules and he just never gets by it. So, like, I can totally see, like, what you were saying earlier, any kind of, like, defensive fuck up, even though a guy hits, like, you know, two straight threes, he's going to be anchored to the bench for like a half. That's probably exaggerating a little bit, but that's like my fear.
But like, look at Keith Williams' minutes last year. Like, every defensive miscue he had, he was on the bench.
Exactly.
This is a pretty, like, unique situation because, like, so many, like, of your, like, major minutes are gone. And there's really, like, no natural guy to, like, really step up and, like, fill the role. It's like, we both believe in, like, Trey Scott. I think he's going to be a good player. But, like, it seems like kind of, like, jumping a step too far to assume he's going to get 30 minutes. I don't know why, but it kind of just does. Like, and it seems like there'll be a rotation between, like, Sosume, Brooks, and Scott at worst. And, like, however Diarra progresses, like, you think he would see some minutes.
I'm really rooting for Diarra to become some kind of game-changing Bearcat because the guy's Instagram game is just through the roof as a freshman. Like, can you imagine that guy if he actually had, like, a hint of stardom around him? He would be an incredible follow on all the social media sites. He's incredible already. I mean, not even just, like, off the court. Like, Diarra came into this team as a player who, you know, he was tall and lanky, but he seemed to have kind of the offensive prowess that you're looking for today's modern forward. It's kind of like a Quadri Moore kind of situation. You know, it just hasn't all kind of connected yet. That being said, I would be a little nervous if I saw Diarra, you know, slotted in game one next to Scott on the starting sheet.
That really is going to make those, like, early season, like, games, like, all the more important. Just, like, see who, like, figures out some of these roles. Because, like, pretty early in the year, like, UC plays in the Emerald Coast Classic.
Yeah.
That's a pretty nice field. The Cincinnati, Baylor, the two big headliners, with George Mason and rebuilding Ole Miss. So you're definitely going to see a couple of quality teams in there, like you would think. Because that's only half the field. There's still four more teams to go, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of looking at that particular field, I mean, if UC has some history with Ole Miss, they lost to the Rebels in the same Emerald Coast Classic back in 2014. And, you know, who knows what Baylor's going to bring next year? I mean, they weren't the Baylor that we saw the last couple of years, but, I mean, the Big 12 was just so stacked, just so absolutely stacked. And then George Mason, who knows what we're going to get out of them. I mean, that's a solid field. That's at least a better field, it looks like, on paper than the Cayman Islands Classic last year, whatever that was, presented them. I mean, Buffalo turned out to be a pretty solid team, a tournament team. Like, I know you were talking about that before the podcast. Wyoming was pretty solid, but they didn't have, like, that big name, big brand name about them, like a Baylor or Ole Miss, or even like a George Mason does. I mean, then you kind of, like, loop in the fact that, you know, they host Ohio State game one on November 7th. They've got Xavier on December 8th and then UCLA on December 19th. I mean, you take those three and then, you know, a combination of Baylor, Ole Miss, and George Mason, I mean, that's a pretty solid non-conference schedule.
That's shaping up pretty nicely. to at least be challenging before we hit the conference season. It'd be nice to see them add like another interesting team. And maybe that's something they're going to be looking for. Like one of those TV types of games. Like they did last year when they played Florida.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one thing that they didn't quite get yet. And I would assume they have room on the schedule. I mean, there's only been like upwards of maybe 8 to 10 teams potentially named so far. I mean, there's got to be room on the schedule to get, yeah, like one of those neutral site games in like New York or Chicago or something like that on the books.
It seems like some of those always come up during the summer when teams are trying to fill spots.
Right. I mean, Mike Bone is burning the candle at both ends to try to get another headliner on the schedule. I mean, so far it's shaping up pretty nicely. Are you surprised to see Xavier so early again, December 8th, basically a month into the season?
Yeah, I kind of am. But I do prefer the early shootouts more than the in-conference shootouts.
Agreed.
But, it gives, the early season schedule, a little bit of, here's the reason to pay attention to UC basketball instead of, watching all the games just because you're a fan. It's, even, the casual folks who, just tune in during conference play or where, UC plays somebody important. It's almost like the official start of the season, in a way.
Yeah, and last year I feel like people kind of griped the fact that, the Xavier game was so early, but, I mean, I'm with you. The Xavier game is a non-conference game. It should be looped in with the other non-conference games on the schedule. You shouldn't have it sitting there in between South Florida and Houston somewhere in, February or whatever. That just never makes sense. UC kind of has the ability to kind of surprise Xavier next season. I mean, Xavier had a lot of turnover. Obviously, Chris Mack is gone, and they lost a ton of senior leadership. And UC's breaking in a brand new arena, and they get Xavier to come over across town a month into the season, and they have an opportunity to really put a chokehold on Xavier in that game, kind of like what Xavier did this past season, where UC was a little surprised and a little shocked at what they were facing, going into the Cintas Center. So I like the ability that they put it in December. I like it. I'd rather have it middle to late December, but I mean the fact that it's in December, I don't really have a beef with. It also seems like just when we're talking about dates, so you got Ohio State November 7th. I mean, then you're probably going to have a bunch of garbage in between. The Emerald Coast Classic is over Thanksgiving, so the 23rd and the 24th, and you have Xavier on December 8th, UCLA December 19th. Interesting that it's, more spread out this year, unlike last year, where it was, a two-week stretch where we had basically a bunch of games crammed together there between Florida, Xavier, UCLA, and Mississippi State. And they played Mississippi State this year on the road. I totally forgot about that. But it's nice that they kind of were able to spread it out a little bit more next year.
Yeah, that just seems to be the better way to judge how your team is. So you're not just running into face first into a gauntlet like UC did last season. It kind of ended up working out okay. They split it. But if you look at some of the teams that schedule up every year. Like Duke, for example, it's they play nobody, then a big game, then nobody for a little while. Then they hit their gauntlet, and then they take a little step back before they start conference play. And that seems to be the type of thing UC's kind of moving to.
Yeah, I mean, the only downside of that is that you do kind of, by spreading it out like this, I mean, you're opening up the season with a pretty damn good Ohio State team. An Ohio State team that is, probably a year or two ahead of schedule, which is a little bit nerve-wracking to me.
Yeah, that Ohio State game does look a lot better than it did last summer when we had no idea what Ohio State would be under Chris Holtman. That'll be a much better game to start off the new Fifth Third Arena.
Right.
So I walk back with my "who really cares about Ohio State basketball" comment.
Apparently, they just needed one good hire to turn that whole thing around, and looks like they did. Overall, I mean, it seems like the days of, 20-something cupcakes with the cross-down shooter are behind us. I mean, they've done a nice job this season. I mean, the last couple of seasons, scheduling some marquee games. And, I mean, part of that is the brand. I mean, now that the brand of UC basketball is a perennial top 25 tournament team, you're getting more calls now than you did 10 years ago from those tournaments and to try to align like these high-profile games to put on TV. So, I mean, that helps. But, I mean, they have the opportunity to play Baylor, Ole Miss, George Mason. They've got Ohio State, Xavier, UCLA, and Mississippi State. I mean, that's a ton of potential tournament teams that they'd be facing in the non-conference next year. And really doesn't get much better than that. What are your outlooks like? Oh, go ahead.
They were definitely helped by Mississippi State, ended up being a more competent team than it seemed. Like, Ben Howland did a good job of turning them around. Like, Ohio State turned around pretty quick. So, and UCLA is always UCLA. And, they have a great class coming in. So, right. There's, a top 25 team that's going to be coming into your arena next year. So, it ended up being a pretty exciting schedule after being oh, that's a big-name team, but, who really cares? Now it's oh, that's a big-name team. That's kind of a pretty important road game at Mississippi State. Bringing in Ohio State is, definitely going to be, a big, kind of one of the main event games to kickstart the season.
Yeah, when is that Mississippi State game? That had to have been announced already, right?
I'm not sure. You caught me off guard.
Yeah, I'm frantically Googling too. I don't see anything. The first page of Google, I got nothing. So, it's somewhere in there. But, yeah, I think that game actually is intriguing because, what is it, Ben Howland, he has most of his team back next year, and, that was a tournament team. I mean, hot damn, this could actually be one of the toughest non-conference schedules UC could have played. It seems like when you're looking at, between Ohio State, Xavier, UCLA, and Ole Miss, or not Ole Miss, Mississippi State, it almost seems like Xavier or UCLA might be the easier games among those four just because of what Mississippi State has returning and the fact that you have to play them on the road.
Yeah, definitely. And, it doesn't really matter how good Xavier is. That's always going to be a tough game.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I guess, overall...
Quick search showed they didn't announce the date when they were playing at Mississippi State.
And that date is?
No, they didn't announce it. They just said it was they were playing.
Oh, they did not. State. Okay, got it. The conjunction got me. The conjunction there got me. Okay. Well, I guess overall, I mean, they haven't announced the full schedule, but, I mean, it's still early. It's April 24th. We got a long time to go. What are your predictions for conference regular season tournament finish, NCAA tournament hopes? What are you thinking, going into next year, Scott?
Oh, God.
I know, yes. You have to sign your name to whatever you just say in the next 2 minutes.
I'll say definite tournament team. I'll jump in there. And I'll say top two in the conference. I think they should compete for the league title. Still, even with a changing team. And presumably with UConn being a little bit better and Wichita State. Did Shamit turn pro? I don't know.
Now I thought he did.
I think he did too. And now you caught me.
I'm pretty sure.
You caught me with a question I was really not prepared for at this time.
Yeah, he just did. He did as of Yeah, a month ago. So I don't know where you've been.
Yeah. So assuming he stays in the draft, like, that team will be a little down, and, like, one of their other players transferred out. So then they lose.
He's going to Memphis, though, right? Isn't that where shit, I know you're talking about. I thought he went to Memphis.
Yeah, I thought, no, that was one of their recruits went to Memphis.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Never mind, yeah, he flipped to Memphis, that's right.
One of their...
Alex, yeah.
Yeah, their shoot, one of their shooter guys. Like, what a great description. Like, transfers.
Shooter guys. Okay. Who isn't a shooter guy in the Greg Marshall offense? Yeah, go ahead. I'm constantly interrupting you.
Like, they should be good. And, like, whatever Memphis is, like that's going to be one of the most interesting questions next season. It's like, what is Memphis? Austin Reeves is who transferred out of Wichita State.
That was it?
Yeah. Who hit 42% from three, so he counted as a shooter guy.
That is the threshold. I think tournament team, I think they're there. I think they've got the culture to be a tournament team, and that's just in their DNA. I think that the schedule, the fact that Wichita State loses a ton next year, Houston loses a decent amount. I think Rob Gray finally graduates after a bazillion years. He does. He's a senior. Woo. Okay, so he's gone. But they still return a good amount, and Kelvin Sampson proves that he's actually a competent coach. I don't believe in Temple. Temple, until they do something with Fran Dunphy, I have no faith in them to actually come back to where they were before. But yeah, you're right. The wild cards there are definitely going to be UConn hiring Rhode Island's head coach, and then Penny Hardaway at Memphis. I don't know if they're going to – I'm still skeptical about Penny Hardaway at Memphis, but – I mean, those are the two ones that you kind of look at and say, yeah, if those coaches figure it out quick, I mean, this could be a really tough battle at the top of the conference. But it's kind of good news that, you know, Houston loses Rob Gray, Wichita State lost a ton, just like UC did. I mean, UC should have a puncher's chance to be like one or two at the top of the conference, you know, come year's end.
Yeah, definitely. And Temple really depends on if Quinn Rose comes back. So I know he declared for the draft. Like, if he ended up coming back, maybe I think that would put them, like, in the upper tier for sure. Just because they would have so many guys besides Etchenoya coming back. But, yeah, it's not going to be a really interesting league because, like, the two big teams, three big teams, counting Houston, like, all lose a lot. And there's definite room to step up. And with the intriguing coaching hires, yeah, it's going to be, and like, yep. SMU, you would think, like, all
the SMU, yeah, all the players, like,
aren't dead anymore. Maybe they have a chance to be good. Although they do lose Milton, I know he declared.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting league because you can probably pencil in UC, Wichita State, Houston, and SMU at least at the top half, if not those four fighting it out for the number one spot. But then, yeah, you can mix in, I mean, I don't know, Central Florida. Maybe they're going to still be kind of decent next year. Temple, like, maybe they don't fall off a cliff again. Like, to your point, they've got a lot coming back. UConn and Memphis, they made good coaching hires. Who knows how quickly they'll turn that around. Danny Hurley seems like a hell of a hire for UConn. That was basically set in stone like 2 years ago. But it's kind of one of those situations where I'm getting the feeling that we're kind of going back to like the Big East football days where the top of the conference just kind of kept beating themselves up. And I mean, not to kind of jump between football and basketball, like playoff or postseason philosophies, but I feel like we might run into that situation. And then like the number one overall seed doesn't get like a number one overall team does get like a two seed in the tournament, but maybe like a three or a four seed. Like I don't see a situation where like you see UC where that just basically runs through most of the conference losing one or two games. Like I think the top team loses like 3, 4, 5 conference games and then caps out around like a 3 or a 4 seed.
Yeah, I could definitely see that happening. Because even if like UConn and Memphis don't take like huge improvements, just like with the coaching changes and like the new players that they're bringing in, like you would think going there is definitely going to be tough. Because I can't imagine UC wouldn't play both of them twice next year.
Right.
Because the Bearcats are definitely going to get the hardest schedule. And like you mentioned UCF, like that was a good one because Taco Fall is definitely coming back. And when he was healthy, that was a really tough team to play. Like they gave UC fits. And then once Taco Fall got hurt, like their season was like pretty much over because they couldn't like score. But that team still tried really hard. And
I mean, their defense was incredible. They were like, what, a top 10 KenPom defense? Like that's they were a hell of a defensive team last year.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, even without Fall, like they were still really good. And so, like, I kind of think that's the dark horse is Central Florida. If they can like get anything going on offense, like if BJ Taylor's healthy for the whole season, like he gives them like a big time scorer, and like that's a team that could be interesting.
Yeah, next season's gonna be kind of like it seems like a transition year, not just for UC but for like the entire conference. Like, can you imagine this team or this conference coming back with Greg Marshall, Mick Cronin, Dan Hurley, Penny Hardaway, Fran Dunphy, if he doesn't continue to shit himself over at Temple, Tim Jankovic. I mean, you are loading up the conference for like the 2019-2020 season with a ton of potential tournament teams. Like we go back to like the Big East basketball days when they got what, like 12 teams in the tournament 1 year. Like we could be looking at a 2020 or 2019-20 season where the AAC is pushing for like maybe like 2/3 to 3/4 of the conference going to the NCAA tournament potentially. Maybe. I mean, just looking more broadly than this program, I mean, the way the AAC has set themselves up for the immediate future looks really, really encouraging from a competitive standpoint.
Next, even if like, you look lower down, like Brian Gregory is like a decent coach at South Florida. Mike Dunleavy, like, made Tulane at least interesting. Like, it helped, like, they had a really, like, great player last year in, like, Reynolds. But at the same time, like, that they ended up, they were almost 500. And, like, the whole league, if, like, with all these, like, quality coaches, it seems like it's on a bit of an upswing. Which I think is definitely encouraging because, like, the first, like, 3 or 4 years of this league, it was so incredibly top-heavy. Because I doubt anybody would say last year wasn't top heavy when, like, the UC went 16-2 and two other teams were 14-4. Like, but now if you get some balance, like, this is a really, I think it could be a really good league.
Oh yeah, and it's encouraging the fact that there's going to be an upswing right around the time when there's, you know, TV negotiation rights coming. I think, I don't remember exactly when the current deal goes through, but I thought it was like the early part of the 2020s when the AAC's contract was up or up for negotiation. I mean, yeah, just the way they're positioning themselves in the football and now basketball side, like all it really needed, and we've been talking about this forever, all this conference needed on the basketball side was for Memphis and UConn to get their acts together and finally figure out that, yeah, we should be competing for conference titles like we had been back in the Big East days. Like, being as bad as they were is, like, completely unacceptable to the league. And look what they did. I mean, UConn hired Dane Hurley. I'm still skeptical about Penny Hardaway at Memphis, but at least he's going to recruit well. They should turn around quickly, and that's two potential additional tournament teams of the three you had last year. And then maybe you had a dark horse there with, like, I don't know, UCF or Temple, and, you know, maybe SMU becomes your seventh. I don't know. It's encouraging, to say the least.
Yeah, even East Carolina, like, made it interesting. They made it interesting coaching hire. They hired Florida Atlantic's, or Florida Gulf Coast's coach. Like, they were still pretty interesting the last couple of years, so maybe he'll do good again. Apparently he already coached East Carolina before, so maybe he can lead them to victory.
Not Jeff Lebo. Who are you talking about? Joe Dooley?
Joe Dooley.
Alright, quick Google search. He actually had a pretty damn good record at Florida Gulf Coast. Before Steve Alford left, or he was followed Steve Alford? Is that what happened there?
He fought Andy Enfield.
Andy Enfield, yeah, my bad. What the hell was I talking about?
I don't know.
Where the hell is Andy Enfield? Is he at USC now?
Yeah. Yeah, he's at USC.
Okay. What the hell was I talking about? Yeah, that's actually a pretty solid hire. I still maintain that East Carolina isn't a black hole in this conference, though. I mean, they have no money, their facilities are dog shit, and they're in a state where they're like Charlotte does a better job of recruiting in state than East Carolina does. Like, that's how bad it is. Like, you're not just competing with like Duke, NC State, North Carolina, Wake Forest, all of those in North Carolina. You're competing, like, you're getting beat out by like Charlotte for recruits. That's how bad it is. And that doesn't even talk about, like, UNC Asheville, UNC Wilmington, like, damn.
Well, if he can bring, like, the fun style of the play he had at Gulf Coast, like, they could be interesting.
Yeah. It's definitely going to he needs to have some kind of gimmick, that's for sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, like, all they have to do is be interesting. And that just not awful.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, like, yeah, if we're going to go ahead and just say that East Carolina is going to kind of be the... the dumpster fire of the conference. It can't be the 300 plus RPI dumpster fire that they've been the last couple of years. They've got to be like in the 200 somewhere. Like, same with South Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, they have to step up their game and not be single digit or 10 win teams.
Yeah.
Let's switch gears and talk about football before we get out of here.
Yep.
I think the big news that got everybody talking was But Ross Trail is transferring out of the program. It seemed like he just wasn't going to get like any opportunity to win the starting role. And really, it seemed like he wasn't like guaranteed to win the backup job. Because he was, from what all reports were, he was splitting reps with the new guys. So he's looking for somewhere new to fall. And it's like clearly Hayden Moore's team. So... does any of this surprise you that he transferred out? Because we kind of talked about it last year, like where there was a chance he would leave, and then now he does after like during the spring, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's surprising and it's not. I mean, it's if you're Ross Trail, you're sitting there on the roster. You've been hidden behind Hayden Moore for one reason or another. For the last 2 years, Hayden Moore is going into his senior year. He's got an inside track of the starting role. You just don't have the favor of the coaching staff around you for whatever reason. I mean, his record, his in-game stats aren't great, but I mean, if you look at some of the games he played, like he was thrown in as the third string quarterback against Houston and threw in a pick six. Like, what are you supposed to do when you're facing the sixth best team in the country and you've got, And you got Ed Oliver staring down at you, like 2 feet away from you. I mean, he was never recruited by anyone on this coaching staff. Darren Hinshaw recruited him, who's now at Kentucky. I still think Ross Trail has the overall better raw talent than Hayden Moore. He just is never going to get that opportunity here. So, you know, in one sense, I'm a little surprised because I was still holding out hope that he would somehow, some way, beat out Ross Trail or beat out Hayden Moore in spring and fall camp, but I, for a litany of other reasons, it makes total sense for him to leave.
Yeah, because if he, like, clearly he wanted a chance to compete for the starting job, and last year he wasn't he injured or something last year.
Yeah, he was injured in fall camp, so then, yeah, he barely practiced.
Yeah, like, it was pretty much Hayden Moore's job, and the coaching staff, like, for whatever reason, just never really thought he would be the man last year. And he didn't really play a ton. Like, Cade Moore ended up starting every game, much to the dismay of some people. And, like, it just seemed like Moore was definitely going to be the starter coming back for his senior season. And, like, if Trey wasn't going to get a chance to win, it seemed like he wanted to go somewhere where he's going to play. Like, who knows where he's going to end up. Because he had some pretty, like, big offers when he signed at UC.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that Darren Hinshaw talked away from signing with Arkansas, you know, of all teams down there. I mean, and he went to high school at Arkansas. It's disappointing because I feel like we're going into another football season here in a few months with questions at quarterback, just like we had last year. We don't have any answers. Like, it's not like I would be shocked to see if Hayden Moore all of a sudden becomes even an average quarterback. Like, he doesn't have the arm strength. He makes stupid decisions in the pocket. He throws way too many interceptions. He doesn't read defense as well. He stares at receivers. He's been doing this for, like, 3 years. Like, there's no way in hell that he's not going to be he's not going to do that. There's no way in hell all of a sudden the light bulb's going to go on. And he's not going to have any of those tendencies when, you know, when the snap is made, like, under the lights. Like, it's just not going to happen. So, like, I was still holding out hope that Ross Traill was going to eventually beat him out in camp. And he could have, I don't know, led this team for the next 2 years and you know, carved out a spot for Ben Bryant behind him. But it's just not going to be the case. So that's like the most disappointing part to me is that I really don't see any situation heading into next year where it's like quarterback is going to lose us a ton of games again.
Yeah, I think that's everybody's like major concern is that you're just leaning right back into the same well where you're like, you were terrible. And now you don't have anything behind Hayden Moore in case like he's bad or he gets injured. You'd just be depending on somebody who has never played.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like of all the quarterbacks to really challenge Hayden Moore this spring, it seems like from Desmond Ridder from Louisville seems to be that guy. I'd like Ben Bryant to redshirt if possible, but I still think he's the quarterback of the future. If not, Yanez Rogers seems to be like kind of your, like almost like Lamar Jackson, scrawnier, smaller quarterback with a live arm and even liver legs, like your perfect mix of a dual threat quarterback. Whereas Ben Bryant seems more kind of like the pocket passer, just tall and lanky. But still, I mean, those are the future. In the immediate term, it's Hayden Moore for 2018, and I don't know how the hell they're going to win more than four games. Like, I was looking at Bill Connolly of SB Nation, SB Plus Analytics. He has UC tabbed as like a 5-7, 6-6 team, something like that, which probably sounds about right. I mean, the defense is probably going to be better. I don't have any idea what the hell the offense is going to do.
Yeah, that's really the big question mark, is whatever the offense is going to do. Like, you hope it's better in year two. But at the same time, like, you could just say a lot of people thought that the offense would have been a lot better with Ross Traill. Like, I know if Matt were here, he would be, like, yelling to the heavens about how it's, like, an injustice that Traill is leaving.
Oh, we are all on. I think we're all on the same page about this whole situation, right?
Yeah, but Matt was always the one who was much more adamant about Ross Traill being so much better than Hayden Moore.
Yeah, and it's like, so I'm of the belief that Ross Traill, we don't really even know if he's that much better than Hayden Moore. I'd even take a step back and say Ross Traill has a lot of the issues that Hayden Moore does in terms of, like, from what we've seen on the field in terms of, like, decision-making and stuff like that. But what he does give you is a liver arm and he's faster with his legs, and he's a bigger body to absorb hits in the pocket. And we just don't really know what this team would look like with him at quarterback, because this coaching staff is anchored to Hayden Moore. I think Rostrell has the raw intangibles that makes him a better quarterback than Hayden Moore, but we just never got a chance to see it, and we never will, and that's what's just so mind-blowing about it.
No, but you could also just, like, look at his stats, and, like, really nothing he did was incredibly, like, mind-blowing. Like, one touchdown to six picks. Like, he only averaged 7 yards completion. Like, I know he, like, yeah,
But that's the thing, is, like, he started one game? And then, like, one of the picks was when he was, like, thrust in against his own goal line, trying to rally a comeback against Houston late in the fourth quarter, because Tommy Tuberville had no fucking idea what to do with quarterbacks when he was here.
He started... He played a lot against Miami, and he had, like, an okay game. He threw two picks. But he did lead them on the game-winning drive. Then he started against South Florida, and, like, it was terrible. And that was it for Rostrell.
Yeah.
Like, I think, like, that, especially that 2016 season, he definitely deserved more of a chance. Because nobody else was any good.
Right.
But it's just, like, kind of interesting that at the same time they had Gunnar Keogh and Rostrell. Like, two, like, really highly thought of recruits who took different weird paths to get to UC, and then they both, like, have weird, like, flameouts from the program.
Hayden Moore had the magical power of beating out both Gunnar Keel and Rostrell, and I have no idea how the hell he pulled off that witchcraft.
How he did it, like, yeah, and without being, like, really great. Like, he's good, but he's not really great.
Hayden Moore? I wouldn't even say he's good. I'm starting to be a dick or whatever, like, with me criticizing Hayden Moore, but I do not think he's good. He's like a 100 to 120 ranked quarterback in college football. Like, out of 100 and something teams.
But now he's a senior.
Yeah. I'm so worried about this team next year. Like, thank God they, like, Fickell can recruit, because they're gonna win and lose a lot of games, like 14-10, 10-7. Like, they've got a running game, which is great, but all of their good receivers are freshmen. All the running backs are freshmen and redshirt freshmen or sophomores. They're like completely rebuilding the offensive line, and they have Hayden Moore at quarterback. So, God. Well, the defense should be good. I'm excited to see Malik Van.
Yeah, the defense should be pretty interesting. The offense is going to be something. Something to watch.
It's going to be something. Let's close out today real quick with NFL draft, since it is draft week. Scott, I'm going to kind of throw you a curveball here. I want you to name an outgoing senior who's most likely to get drafted this coming weekend, and his name isn't Corey Cunningham.
Mike Boone?
Oh, Mike Boone! That's a good choice.
Is there a chance he could get drafted? I know he visited the Raiders. That's the only thing I know.
I feel like of all, like Corey Cunningham seems to be, like, penciled in as, like, the most likely draft pick, you know, from UC, just because of his size and experience and all that stuff. But yeah, it seems like Mike Boone has, like, the most likely one to go, like, after him, if anything. Like, it looks like Lyndon Stevens got a little bit of good press, maybe, but
it's like, if Mike Boone gets drafted, he'll be like a sixth or seventh round pick, it seems.
Right. Yeah, for sure. I mean, the one that's actually kind of disappointing. It's one of the most disappointing, like, careers of, like, of a recent UC player. Like, Mike Boone, he's, you know, all in the world. The Tommy Tuberville staff doesn't play him as much as they should. you know, they're giving ISO plays up the middle to Ralph David Abernathy while, you know, Mike Boone rides the bench. He can't see the field. Then he eventually does see the field. He lights up the scoreboard, and then he gets injured, and then he gets passed over by a couple of freshmen his senior year. And then, you know, he's a guy that who probably should be like a first to third round draft pick if his career at UC had kind of gone better. But that's what it is. Do you see anyone else like the senior class going? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know, Lyndon Johnson maybe. I mean, he's a big defensive lineman. I don't know. Not Carter Jacobs. Probably none of the secondary. Anyone other than like Mike Boone you think might get drafted?
I don't know. I think there's maybe a chance. But I don't know. I'm not really too sure. Seems like most of the guys are going to be like free agents.
And yeah.
Like have one of those like handshake deals or whatever it is. And then they sign like as soon as the draft is over.
Yeah, you probably figure like Devin Gray probably gets an undrafted free agent. Jalen Minor gets an undrafted free agent. Maybe Tyler Cogswell. Yeah. It's probably going to be a little light for the next year or two in terms of like NFL draft guys coming out of UC.
Yeah, because like you got to think like somebody like Devin Gray, like has enough skill and like enough talent to end up in a camp, even if right. like his numbers, like really, it wasn't his fault, but like his numbers in college didn't really stand out. But like neither did Mikhail Mackaysen, like he was on practice squad for the last 2 years.
Right. So yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like one of those situations where. Like Corey Cunningham's probably gonna be like your most likely guy, but then that yeah, it's probably gonna be Mike Boone and then nobody else. But oh, good luck to those guys.
Yeah, it'll still be an exciting day, at least exciting.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Exciting last day of the draft for them.
That's yeah, it'd be nice because you're coming off of a season that was so disappointing and kind of like you know put a bow on it and like put a positive spin on it. Go ahead.
I was just looking at Mike Boone's numbers, and yeah, you're right, it is pretty sad.
Like, it is, like, not his, like, most of it is, like, not his fault, it feels like. Like, the first couple of years, he was, like, pigeonholed, or he was anchored to the bench because this off the Tuberville staff had no idea what to do with him. It sounded like his pass blocking wasn't great, but, I mean, I don't know why you're worried about pass blocking when you have the best running back or one of the best, most talented running backs to come through UC, like sitting right there on the bench, but whatever. And then he just got injured for the last 2 years. This is what it is.
Next, if like you said, like, oh, he'll never have a more than 110 carries a season. You be like, oh, that can't be true. Look how good he is as a freshman. And then look how great he was as a sophomore. And then, like you said, like injuries and the line and like play calling really just like ravaged his last 2 years. So like right. where he wasn't the same like dynamic player that he had been. Like he showed like flashes as a receiver, but like just in the running game, so, like it disappeared. Which is like really, I don't even know like how you would explain something like what happened to him. See like all these big runs his first 2 years. Like oh he's the home run hitter, Mike Boone, and then like last year he had. Like 3 20-yard runs the entire season. It's just like really head scratching. Like he had 3 20-yard runs though his last 2 years at UC, like total, which is like really crazy and like hard to believe.
Yeah, it's just it's kind of like a perfect storm. He got it was almost kind of like the Ross Trail situation. He got injured kind of in the off season. That he had a nagging injury throughout the season, and it allowed other players to jump him. I mean, Jerry Doakes looks like a star, but I mean, he probably doesn't get those opportunities if Mike Boone is fully healthy. And Michael Warren looked pretty good too for the exact same reason. You know, it's exciting because we know we have those guys. Like, you know, we get to watch those two guys for the next 3 years. But it's also disappointing because Mike Boone probably could have been a first or second day draft pick if all things went well. But yeah, just kind of disappointed from that standpoint. But hopefully, he still has a chance to get on a roster and show what he can do, you know, at the professional level.
Actually, like, Pavley is, like, 100% heel now, and he can, like, has a showcase for his, like, raw ability. So it seemed like he could be a home run hitter somewhere.
Right.
Because, like you said, like, last year, after he missed, got hurt and missed a couple of games, like, he really just couldn't really, like, find his way back into the rotation, like, consistently. Because you had Dokes and Warren, like, really step up and, like, demand that it be a three-man job.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're looking at this from the standpoint of, like Mike Dembrock here, I mean, would you rather go with the younger, healthier, talented running back or the veteran who could be coming up hobbling any given play? I get why they went the younger route, just because Boone was injured for so long, and unfortunately, his numbers did decline the senior because of that. Like you talked about, just it is what it is.
So on that depressing note, do you have anything else before we wrap this one up?
No, I hate that we're down on a depressing note, but at least, you know, we've got the off season to kind of kick around some ideas for next year. We can talk about the schedule. I'm sure the football schedule is going to come. The football schedule did come out, didn't it?
Yeah,
didn't it come out? It did. We already talked about that. I don't even remember. I'm sure a ton of recruiting. I'm sure there's going to be a ton of signees this summer. It's going to be a pretty exciting off season. Especially on the basketball path, where, you know, we could kick around a million different lineups and bench guys, six men, that kind of stuff. It could be a pretty fun off season.
Yeah, and it definitely will be. Like, one thing like that won't stop is, like, there'll be crazy stuff that happens. Because crazy stuff always happens.
That's right. It is UC, and yeah, who knows? Maybe we'll get a Big 12 invite sometime this summer.
Let's not go crazy. Yeah, well, thanks for joining us. We'll come back sometime soon and break down all the big happenings with UC. Do you have anything else to add, Chris?
Nope, I'm good. Go Bearcats, and we'll talk to you soon.